over Proverbs chapter number 10 this morning. Proverbs chapter number 10. And we ended up last week over in chapter 9, looking at lesson 28 and 29. I'm going to give you 30 and maybe 31 this morning. And that means then that next Sunday we'll bring to the class the updated sheet of lessons every time we in increments of 10. So now that we're on lesson 30 this morning, we'll bring the sheet giving you every lesson that we've studied so far out of the book of Proverbs, which comes to 30. For those of you visiting, Brother Andrew, we're doing a series called Living Life Wisely. It is 100 lessons on the subject of wisdom out of the book of Proverbs, on every subject you can think of when it comes to this life. We looked at lesson 28 and lesson 29 last week out of chapter 9. Lesson 28 came out of verse 8. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Lesson 28 was living life wisely means I learn to love the ones who rebuke me. Okay? You learn to love the ones who rebuke you. Lesson 29 comes out of verse 12. If thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself. But if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. Lesson 29, living life wisely, means we understand the reality of personal responsibility. I don't care what kind of situation you came out of, according to your family upbringing, whether it was full of Bible influence or whether it was lacked Bible influence completely. Ultimately, friend, now that you've been shown the truth, exposed to the truth, that's the word I was looking for. Now that you've been exposed to the truth, you have the opportunity to make the right choices for your life. And so do I. And we stand before God. We're not going to stand with those around us who we're going to point a finger of blame at and say, Lord, I didn't serve you because of him and her and them and so forth and so on. None of that will happen, friend. We'll stand before God ourselves. Amen. It's a matter of personal responsibility. We looked at Ezekiel chapter 18 where God said, you've used this proverb. The fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. You know, the children were saying we can't help how we behave because our fathers ate sour grapes. And we're sick because of what they ate. Doesn't happen that way. If you eat something that's rotten, you get sick. Not your kids, not your spouse. Okay, not your grandkids. The Lord said, you're not going to have any occasion anymore to use that proverb. We're going to put an end to that. Every man's going to stand on his own two feet and make his own decisions. It's a matter of personal responsibility. We live in a society that is absolutely teaching everybody that there's somebody to blame for your failures. There's somebody to blame for your weaknesses. And that's not according to the Word of God. Let's move on now. Chapter 10, verse number 4. Here's lesson 30 today. We may not get off of it because it's such a vital lesson. Lesson 30, chapter 10, verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Here's lesson 30. Living life wisely means I am honest and above board with my finances. Living life wisely means I am honest and above board with my finances. Now, friend, we're living in a day when more young people, and I'm talking about young couples, are in trouble because of poor financial practices than they are in trouble because of poor moral character. That's the honest truth. We are seeing more couples in trouble because of poor financial practices than they are in trouble because of poor moral character. Ben was in a church not too long ago, good-sized church, and to present his mission work. And he told me, he said, Dad, the preacher preached on that evening, and he made this statement. He said, the average young couple in our church is in $20,000 of credit card debt. Now you think about that. $20,000 of credit card debt. That's unbelievable. Okay? The average couple in the church. That's what he said. $20,000. Now, the handling of money, and the handling of money properly, is dealt with over and over again in God's Word. And the importance of being completely above board in the arena of money is essential to having God's blessings, listen now, in other areas of life. And I'm going to prove that to you this morning from the Bible. So you say, well, you know, it's just money, and money's not that important to God. Oh, no. Time out. How I handle money, okay? The handling of money properly, according to Bible principles, and we'll say it again, is essential to having God's blessings in other areas of life, okay? Areas that are more important than money. And I'm going to show you that. Now, the word slack here, verse number 4, he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. The word slack means deceitful, remiss, and false. Okay, so what Solomon is saying here, those who seek to become rich or to make money by means that are less than honest eventually end up poor. That's how they end up. They end up poor. People who would cheat and lie and embezzle or use deceit to gain some, you know, to experience some financial gain, they will be found out. And in the end, they will become poor. You see, folks, there are many ways to keep dishonesty from the eyes of men. But there is no way to keep dishonesty from the eyes of God. None. No possible way to do that. Okay? God can unveil dishonesty very easily and reveal it to the eyes of men, who then in turn can take action. This, boy, haven't we seen this with corporations in the last 3 or 4 years? All this corporate crime and embezzlement. And I'm talking about, man, alive, boy, God just exposed all that. I mean, you're talking about high dollar crime, okay? High dollar crime. And then you got all the political corruption. And I don't care what tag you are. I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't matter your tag, friend. It seems like money takes those guys down quicker than anything. You know, most of us in this church would be conservative Republicans. You know, you're quick to condemn the Democrats for their social policies and everything, which I think they're wrong on. But I'm going to tell you something. I get weary of the Republicans going down in Congress, taking money on the side and on the sly, you know, and all that stuff. I'm telling you what, it corrupts people unbelievably. Okay? Now, he that dealeth with a slack hand. He that dealeth with a slack hand becometh, he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. Now, in contrast, people who practice diligence with their finances are blessed. And that's the second half of the verse. But the hand of the diligent maketh rich. You say, oh boy. Ha-ha. Wait a minute. Our idea of rich may not coincide with the concept of rich that the Bible mentions in this verse. Okay, I mean, our idea of rich, come on now, is money piled up, a lavish house, a fancy vehicle, you know, much disposable income and no financial restraint. That's our idea of rich. Okay, but I want you to look at verse 22 in this same chapter here. Look what God said. Verse 22. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Boy, that's a great verse right there. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Let me ask you a question. I'm sure that every one of you, and me too, we all know people who have money piled up, a lavish house, a fancy vehicle, much disposable income, no financial restraint, and yet they're sorrowful. They're missing out. Something's not right. They're unhappy. Their marriages are falling apart. Their kids and them are distanced. They have no relationship. And there's no joy. See, we know, look, that's not the kind of rich that God is talking about in verse number 4 here. That's not the kind of rich that verse 22 is talking about. The kind of rich that God is talking about, and it may not mean unending or endless financial resources. God's idea of what makes a person rich is quite different than our concept of that. Okay? He that dealeth with a slack hand become poor. He that is diligent, the hand of the diligent, makes rich. That could be financially. It could happen monetarily. But there are so many other ways and so many other areas in which we ought to be rich that are so much more important than money riches. Okay? And that's what we want. See, what we want is, here's your phrase. And this is where we're going. What we want is true riches. And that's a Bible term, true riches. Now let's get over there. Keep your finger here in Proverbs 10. And let's get over in chapter 16 of the Gospel of Luke, okay? And we're going to spend a little time here this morning. Luke chapter 16. And I want you to look with me here at verse number 1. Luke chapter 16 and verse number 1. We're not going to go through the entire parable here, but I want to start in verse 1. Bible says, he said also unto his disciples, this is now Jesus speaking, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. So you got the parable here of the unjust steward. This is a parable about money, okay? You got the rich man. The rich man owns everything, and he has a steward. Watch me. The steward doesn't own it, but he is the manager of what the rich man owns. You with me so far, okay? So we're talking about the unjust steward. The rich man calls the unjust steward in and says, man, things aren't going right. You're not performing your duties. You're not handling your responsibilities. You're not taking care of that which belongs to me. Okay? So he says, we got to have an accounting here. So he's going to make this man accountable. Look at verse 2. He called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. He said, now you're going to have to reckon up. Okay? Now, I want to look at three verses with you in detail this morning. Look at verse number 10. Luke 16, verse 10. Notice what Jesus said here. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. Okay, let me start again. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. All right, let's talk about this verse. There's a contrast here between a man who is faithful and just and one who is unfaithful or unjust. Okay? The faithful man is just or equal, watch it now, both in secondary and primary matters. Secondary, least. Primary, much. Okay? That's where you got the two words there. Least and much. Secondary matters, that which is least. Primary matters, that which is much. Okay? This faithful man, he is just or equal in that which is least, secondary, and that which is much or primary. Okay? Are you with me so far? That's not hard, right? Okay, now, he is proven to be faithful first by being given matters that are secondary. And once he proves himself faithful in matters that are secondary or least, then he is given the opportunity to have that which is much or primary. But he's not given the primary first. He's given the secondary first. Are you with me? Okay. It's like if you had a small business, you know, and you're going to hire some employees. And if you're a small business owner, no matter what the business is, you hire a new employee, you know, unless you went on a headhunter search and how to hire somebody specifically with certain qualities and so on. I'm talking about just hiring a guy. You know, he fills out an application. You know, and you hire a guy off the street. You need a laborer. Okay. And you bring him in. You don't start him out on matters of vital importance to the well-being of your business. You start him out on matters of lesser importance because you, as the business owner, you first want to discern or ascertain his level of diligence with small stuff before you give him matters of primary importance. Okay, and if that newly hired employee proves faithful in the small stuff, then we're going to increase his responsibility. And if he proves faithful in that, we're going to increase his responsibility until someday he may. You know, this happened to my dad when he high school education. Back in the days when you could get a job with a high school education, he went to college one semester. That's it. And my dad wasn't fit for college back then, and he started at General Motors as a floor sweeper. Basically what his job was. When he finished 35 years later, he was upper mid-level management. But they don't bring a guy in with a high school education, put him in an upper mid-level management job. They bring him in and they sweep the floor. And if he sweeps it diligently, and he does that which is right, and he handles it equally and just, and proves himself to be faithful in that which is least, now let's see what you can do with this. Okay? When I hired on at Ramsey's at the grocery store, the little grocery store there in Cliftondale, you know, when I hired on at age 15, in fact, I don't think I was quite 15, or maybe I was just 15. And I got a job there. And, you know, I wasn't given the cashier job. I wasn't given the handling of the money, the ordering of the stock. I was given the job of sorting the pop bottles. Oh, brother. You talk about a nasty job. This is back in the days when they, you know, cans weren't even out. You know, everything was in a bottle. You know what I'm talking about? And they had 8-packs and 6-packs, and they had 10-ounce bottles, they had 12-ounce bottles. Then they came out with 16-ounce bottles. You had Pepsi and Coke and Mountain Dew and all the Coke products and all the Pepsi products. And the consumer, you know, picks up a pack of Pepsi, picks up a pack of Orange Crush, picks up a pack of Coke, and they drink the pop, and then they don't put all the bottles back in the original. Remember the little carrying case, the cardboard carrying case? And when they bring the bottles in, because there's a deposit on the bottle. When they bring the bottles in, here you got this, it's got one Orange Crush, one Coke, one 16-ounce Coke bottle, one 10-ounce Coke bottle, a Dr. Pepper bottle, a Diet Coke bottle, you know, a Sprite bottle, and Pepsi products, a Coke, all mixed up. When the Pepsi guy comes to get the Pepsi bottles, he ain't taking those Coke bottles. When the Coke guy comes to get the Coke bottles, he ain't taking the Pepsi bottles. So the guy on the bottom of the totem pole gets to sort them all out. Grocery carts full. You know how fun that was, folks? It is horrible. Horrible. Sticky old nasty pop everywhere, you know, and sorting all those bottles out, getting to place, you know. And that's what I started out doing, filling the milk case. I'll never forget, first day on the job, they were showing me how to fill the milk case. You get the big milk case in the store, right? You know what I'm talking about? It gets empty, you got to take the new gallons out there, but it's all got to be rotated. Because it goes out by date, right? So you got to pull all the old stuff to the front, put all the new stuff in the back. Sometimes you got to unload this. You got this great big thing. So I'm walking along. You know how you are first day on the job. We got this little truck thing full of all these wire basket cape. You know, 4 gallons of milk in each basket. I think there's 16 baskets on this truck. You know, and he's pushing it out there. He's going to show me how to do it. I got size 12 feet. And I'm walking along. You know, and I'm wanting to do everything right. And I get my foot in front of the wheel. He's pushing the wheel thing along, boom, hits my foot, and 8 of those cases go, spish, milk all over the floor. I have 4 or 5 gallons of milk, but that's not the way to start a new job. Not the way to start a new job. That was my job. Fill the milk case. Clean the meat room. Nasty old stuff. I mean, tear down all the saw and the slicer and the grinder and break it all down, learn how it all goes together, wash it all up. It took 3 or 4 hours on Saturday night to do that. That wasn't very exciting. And I'll tell you what, when I finished 3 years later, I wasn't sorting bottles and I wasn't cleaning the meat room and I wasn't filling the milk case. I was taking care of the grocery stock, placing the orders, because I had enough sense, even as a lost person, to do my job diligently, take care of the small potato stuff. That's how you get the big potato stuff. Are you with me? Okay. This is what the Bible is teaching here in verse number 10. Okay, now we go to verse number 11. Look at it. If therefore, so it's referring back to verse number 10. Go to your example in verse number 10 now. If you're faithful in the small stuff, you're going to be faithful in the big stuff. Okay, but if you're unfaithful in the small stuff, you're never going to get the big stuff. Okay, now, if therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? Now, this verse teaches us the difference between that which God sees as the least and that which God sees as the much. The much. Get my words right here. Now, go back to verse number 10. In verse 10, you got two phrases there, right? The least is mentioned first in both phrases. And the much is mentioned last in both phrases. Do you see that? He that is faithful in that which is least, first, is faithful also in much. Okay? So you got least, then much. That pattern continues in verse number 11. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, the least, who will commit to your trust the true riches, the much? Do you see what he's doing here? Do you see how the pattern follows? Okay, you say, what's unrighteous mammon? The word mammon means money or worldly riches. God sees money as the least. And he sees true riches as the much. God sees money as a secondary matter. And he sees the true riches as the primary matter. Are you with me? True riches are spiritual riches, spiritual blessings, spiritual gifts. Look at Proverbs chapter 8. Let's go back there real quick. I got to do that real quick. But you held your finger in chapter 10, I hope. Look at verse number 18 and 19. Look at what God said here in Proverbs 8, 18 and 19. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. You see, true riches are spiritual riches, spiritual blessings, spiritual gifts. And God said it's better than gold, better than silver. That's a mentality that the American, average American cannot accept. We believe that money is the most important thing in all the world. But the Bible teaches us that there are a lot of things in life more important than money. More true riches, okay? Now, marriage, family, joy, peace, contentment, faith, love, hope, laughter, and friends are all much more important than money. Now watch this. If I am ever to be trusted with true riches, I must first be able to be trusted with money. If I am ever to enjoy spiritual blessings, I must first employ diligence with money. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
This is what this is teaching here. Now, let's finish it all up in verse number 12. And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's. That's two important words right there. Another man's. Who shall give you that which is your own? This verse ties all of these principles together and ties it in with our verse in Proverbs. Until I prove to be faithful with the money that belongs to someone else, I'll never be given any of my own. True riches. If I am deceitful, slack, or underhanded with money that belongs to someone else, I will remain poor, not only financially, but I'll also remain poor when it comes to the true riches. Listen very carefully to the next statement I'm about to make. Not all money that comes to me belongs to me. Not all money that comes to me belongs to me. Some of it belongs to another man. Now let that sink in for a minute. What belongs to the tithe? 10% of what comes to me doesn't belong to me. It belongs to God. That's taught all through the Bible. I don't have time to go teach you a lesson on the doctrine of tithing this morning. And some people have this crazy idea that when you get to the New Testament, it just wipes out the Old Testament doctrine and teaching on tithing. No, Jesus reinforced that thing. Okay? And if the New Testament teaches us anything, it's that grace demands more than law ever did. So if the law demanded 10%, guess what grace does? Oh! Okay? The tithe belongs to God. What about my bills? What about my electric bill, my gas bill, my phone bill? If I have a bill that a vendor has provided me a service, okay, and I agreed to pay him so much for the service that he provides me, and he provides a service, then the money that I get, some of that money belongs to him because he's provided me with electricity, he's provided me with gas, he's provided me with phone service. It's not mine. It belongs to him. You know, I'm sorry, you can't have your phone service and keep the cash that you too. Okay? Needs money. You say, what's needs money? I'm talking about needs money belongs to those who are under my care. My wife and my kids are my responsibility. And some of that money that comes to me in my paycheck from Faith Baptist Church belongs to them. It should be used to provide for them. Okay? And the Bible says in 1 Timothy that if I don't provide for my own, I'm worse than an infidel. So not all money that comes to me belongs to me. You say, boy, Brother Angel, my gracious, when you take tithe, bills, and needs money, there ain't a lot left. Getting the picture here. Now, wait a minute. I must prove myself faithful in that which is least. What is least? Money matters is least. And if I don't prove myself faithful with that which is least, which belongs to another man, I am going to forfeit the true riches. I'll never enjoy the true riches that I could enjoy. So what does that mean? How do I need to treat the tithe? I need to be faithful with it. Because it's God's. It's not mine. So I've got to be faithful with it. I got to prove myself faithful. How do I prove myself faithful? I pay my bills on time. What if catastrophe happens? I call them in advance. I don't just sit at home and do nothing and not send the payment in or send it in 15 days late. I call them. Let me talk to the billing department. This is so-and-so. This is my account number. And I've had a setback and we've had to do this. And I'm going to get this to you 10 days late. Or I can get you 50% of this. Or I can get you 75% of this. That's called handling it faithfully. Okay? I think I'll just stick it in the drawer, forget about it until I hear from them again. So you put the burden on them. That's not right. That's not handling it faithfully. Okay? I'm not saying people are wrong for getting in a tight situation. I can't blame people sometimes for having a setback. You know, my wife and I had setbacks. We may have one next month. I don't know. When we was a young couple, we had them. And there were times you have to call and say, look, this thing is going to be 5 days late. So it's going to happen. It's going to be this much. But you prove yourself faithful. Needs money. That means as a dad, I can't run out and spend money on new camo and new bows and arrows and not provide and feed my kids oatmeal. Wouldn't hurt them to have oatmeal once in a while. You know, cereal every day while dad's out, you know, philandering around with his money, doing this, living the high life while wife and kids go without their needs met at home. That's not going to work. Are you with me this morning? If I am going to enjoy the true riches in this life, I cannot deal with a slack hand. He that dealeth with a slack hand becometh poor. But he that is diligent attendeth to riches. True riches. Not that which we think is the much. And we got to get it in our minds. We got to look at it. You know, wisdom, if you want to boil it down to one sentence, wisdom is learning to see things as God sees them. And until you and I come to grips with this thing, I preached on that some months ago here. I preached on it to the college a couple weeks ago. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Do we believe that? You know, I talked about if we fill that choir loft up there with gold and silver and pile it up with $100 bills and say, okay, you can have all of that and you can have a good name. Your choice. I said back then, I think I'd take the money and work on the name. Amen. But seriously, God said that's a poor choice. We got to learn to look at life as God sees it. God looks at this life. He does not see this stuff as the most. They said, Brother Andrew, what do you say? You just say money is unimportant. No, lesson 31. I'm going to come back with something just. This is not unimportant. Look at this stuff right here. So you got some in your pocket, your purse this morning. I'm not going to ask you to get it out. So look at mine, okay? Here's one, two, three. There's $23 right there in my pocket. I don't have anything more. That's it. That's the sum total of the money I got on my person today. $23. Okay? God does not see this stuff as the much. He sees it as the least. So, well, good. No. I got to prove myself faithful with this. I got to sort the Coke bottles and fill the milk case, and I've got to clean the meat room before I can order the stock. And also have my wages increased, by the way. I got to do that. I got to take care of that which is least and do it diligently and faithful before I'll ever be entrusted with that which is much. The true blessings. Go back to what I said at the beginning of the lesson. There are more young couples in trouble today because of poor money character than they are poor moral character. You got to learn how to properly handle it. Okay? It's not just so you'll have more money. So you'll have true riches. True riches. Believe me. Okay, I'm older than I think about everybody in this room. 26 and a half years into marriage, is that right? Boy, I better remember that. I think it's 26 and a half years into marriage. I think it'll be 27 this June. 9 to 6, 27. Okay? I got some married kids now. I can tell you after 26, I mean, there is a lot more to life that makes up true riches than this stuff right here. Okay? A lot more to life. And you can have it, but you're going to have to prove yourself diligent with this. That which belongs to the other man. Okay? Was it what this is what this rich man's, that's what his problem was. Son, steward, you've not handled that which belongs to me correctly. Are you listening? So you're going to lose your stewardship. Well, he's going to go from what? A job to what? No job. He becomes what? Poor. Okay. All right. We'll get into 31 next week, bring you up to date with all 30 of the lessons we've looked at so far on a sheet of paper. Brother Steers, God bless you. We'll have you pray for the service and give a word to the folks, okay?